Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the 183rd edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability. And as we get ready, of course, the opening weekend of Major League Soccer has come. The season is already underway. Everything has looked pretty good for some teams, terrible for others. But to be honest, great opening match, hard-fought match between the Seattle Sounders and Sporting Kansas City. And I got to tell you, just no problems here. What I saw, great stuff going on, great action, great stuff moving ahead. And all I can say is this. I think this is going to be probably the best season MLS is going to have. So many teams fighting, not probably just jockeying for positions throughout the entire regular season, but who is going to make the playoffs and what it could come out into, especially maybe the Open Cup. Could see something spectacular this year. We could see great goals. We could see fantastic saves. We could see somebody really doing well here. And who knows? Will there be a repeat for an MLS Cup champion in Sporting Kansas City? Or could we finally see, possibly, depending on what happens this week and next week, the first MLS team to win the CONCACAF Champions League? That is something that I think it's going to be interesting to watch. But as you know, all of you know where I stand about how the game is going to do in this country, what needs to be done, not just with the rules, not just with how the salary structures are. To be honest, there is a setback in the American game. And sadly, it is the referees. Before this past weekend came underway for the 2014 MLS season, word came from Commissioner Don Garber from Major League Soccer. The referees have been locked out, performing their duties to manage Major League Soccer games. Now, some of you are probably going to make a joke about it. I mean, I was thinking about making a joke about it, and I was going to have a laugh over it. But the truth is, it's not funny. Because right now, they've been hampered. The referees who are following, dictating, executing the laws of the game on the pitch are being prevented from doing so. Replacement referees have already been instituted. And may I say, not bad. Maybe they'll be a little bit better than the referees that are normally out there. But the truth is, we need those officials to be on the field. The one official I feel bad for right now is Mark Geiger, because he's not getting games since the preseason ended. He's already lost one round of games. And I understand where the referees are coming from. They are looking to get paid a better wage, and I understand that. I'm not blaming them right now. But just as negotiations are always going to be messy when financial terms are available and are around as well, this is a situation where it's going to get messy and sticky, and we don't know what's going to happen at the end of the 2014 season when the players' union are about to face Major League Soccer, and hopefully there will be an agreement. Sorry about that, everybody. I haven't had that happen to me in a very long time, unfortunately, Skype failing me, but I'm glad to be back up here. As I was trying to say before, unfortunately, the referee situation was not, it's not that good that they're not getting any games, especially Mark Geiger. And you know, Mark Geiger, and you have to give credit where credit is due. You got to give credit to Mark Geiger, who, in my opinion, is right now the best referee coming out of U.S. Soccer, as well as this pro department for American ref soccer referees. And it's going to be a shame. It's going to be a real shame if he's not going to be able to officiate matches, because I'll be honest with you, I think he's going to be among the many in the pool to officiate in the Brazilian World Cup this coming June 12th. And right now, he's not getting matches because of this wage dispute. Because, like I've always said to you all before, we need every aspect of the game internally, off the field, on the field, to work as one. And once again, the sad thing is this. Our referees are not being used. They're not being used out on the field right now to officiate and dictate and explain the laws of the game out on the pitch. This is a situation where U.S. Soccer must do something. I think Major League Soccer has to be involved in this as well, because we cannot have replacement referees taking over for the people that should be out there. This is, at the moment, a negative step for Major League Soccer, for U.S. Soccer, because they're not getting games. And that is the one thing that we need for this game to improve. All aspects need to improve, including the referees. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. But they stink. None of them are good. Bring out the replacement refs. They could probably do a better job anyway. But that's not the case. And while I will admit it's nice to see Abe Okalaja out there officiated the Red Bull Vancouver Whitecap match, the truth is he's retired from officiating official professional games. He's officiating the NCAA games now. And I think while he's done a good job in that game, and some of these other referees have probably done a very good job officiating these games, they're not the ones that we should see match in and match out. And let's not also forget those from the Canadian Soccer Association that's a part of Pro. Let's not forget that. So once again, every aspect of this labor dispute will affect what's going to happen at the end of the 2014 season, because the players are up next, and this could be a lot worse than what's going on with the referees right now. We need to have this situation nipped in the bud as quickly as possible. They lost one game. That's fine. The problem will be how many more games they're going to lose if they're still going to be locked out, not talking, and not taking care of this situation. Listen, I want good officials as well. I want solid officials up and down the field, the assistants, the fourth official, the main referee in the middle of the field. I want them to be solid and strong. But let's get this thing done. Let's get this deal hammered out. Because at the moment, the players are hurt. The coaches are getting hurt. Coaching staffs are getting hurt. The league is getting hurt. And the fans are getting hurt. And I know we're not there to watch the referees. But the truth is they will become a bigger microscope on them if they do find a way and everything else that's going to be a part of this. Everything else is going to be, I think everything's going to be great. But once again, everybody, we all need this, and we all need this to be taken care of now. But once again, we talk about what goes on with Major League Soccer. We love Major League Soccer. We want Major League Soccer to thrive, survive, and be the best league, not just in the United States, of course, because they are the Division I league, but within the region of CONCACAF as well as around the world. And in my mind, this is right now becoming a bit of a black spot. Not an eye. I don't think we're there yet. At the moment, it's a black spot. It's not that big because if it gets a lot worse, then we can throw that adjective out there. It's just a little spot. That's all. But I think it's time for Major League Soccer to start understanding that if you want to be the best league in the world by 2022, it's time to change the rules. It's time to change things up and time to do something different because we cannot continue to have certain situations coming in on the cheap. Everything has to grow. Everything has to be top-notch. And we have to make sure everything is growing at the same time. Ladies and gentlemen, I got a great show for you tonight. We're going to have on, unfortunately, I just found out from Kurt Austin from Sporting Kansas City. Kerry Savagnin is not available to come on tonight, but we're going to have on later on around 8:30 or 8:45. John Pascarella, who is the assistant and goalkeeper coach for Sporting Kansas City, talking about, of course, their CCL chances along with the change in goal for SKC since the retirement of Jimmy Nielsen. Of course, we're going to also talk about the LA Galaxy. Hopefully we'll have a member of the LA Galaxy on from the coaching staff to discuss. If not, talk about LA Galaxy and San Jose Earthquakes in the CONCACAF Champions League as well in the quarterfinals. We'll preview the quarterfinals. And then, of course, the Red Bull Hour. The Red Bull Hour, where we're going to discuss the that terrible loss over in Vancouver in the season opener. But awaiting my first guest, of course, a situation that popped up here, and boy, I got to tell you, it's been pretty darn interesting how fast news travels in U.S. soccer circles. Of course, they play in the National Premier Soccer League. It is, of course, Nashville FC. And I believe I have on the phone with me Mr. Chris Jones. Chris, how's it going?
Doing all right, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all. Before we get to the crux of this wonderful thing you're doing down in Nashville, Are you sick and tired of the news media, of the soccer media, getting information from you, from this wonderful thing you've done?
No, not at all. You know, it's the little intro you had there is spot on. It's interesting how small the soccer community is, even from coast to coast. There really is, it's unique to any other sport. It's like a family all in itself, no matter where you live in the United States. It's a really cool, really cool thing.
Oh, it really is, and this is just a wonderful thing that pops up. And, while I do have a rooting interest on a Major League Soccer team, I really want the sport as a whole to be healthy, not just with support, fan support, financial support, and, of course, stadiums that we can all call their own, no matter how small or how big it is.
Yeah, I think we can learn a lot. Obviously, I'm born and raised American, and there's a lot of pride in that. But we can learn a lot from European soccer, and the fact that there are so many supporter-owned clubs. There's a reason for that. Different territories throughout Europe, and especially in the UK, they've tried their individual owners, they've tried ownership groups, and by and large, they're successful, but they're, not every owner is a good owner. And so we can learn a lot from the trials and tribulations that they've gone through and capitalized on that. And I think that's something we've been able to do with being in touch with FC United of Manchester and other groups like that.
Absolutely. And it's a great story, of course. And I mean, you've probably been asked this already too many times, but just for my listeners, please, when did this get started? How did it get started? And how many people have joined since the creation of Nashville FC?
Yeah, so legally and officially, we first became an organization, I believe it was in August. Around August was when we first filed for our charter with the state of Tennessee and things like that. But we had the website and the kind of social media campaigning and things like that going on around mid-May. But as far as the idea, it was something actually that personally I kind of toyed with for a few years now, but we had a team that was in the PDL that had been here since the late 80s and didn't seem like they were going to go anywhere. But then all of a sudden, come February 2013, they just closed shop. And so it left a void, and that was one of the things that really sparked this interest of, look, let's not go through this again where, we have a team here and then it's just gone without any kind of warning. So around May, like I said, is when we started the whole social media stuff, and it's perpetually just grown and grown, and it's really picked up speed with every new announcement that we have out there. And to this day, I might be a little off, but we're right around 450 members. That includes 28 or 29 different states and 5 different countries. So it really has been kind of surreal. We initially set the goal to have 150 members, before the first game. And, because of the MLS article and Kick TV and podcasts like yours, we've been able to surpass that. And it's been a pretty cool thing.
Oh, it really is fantastic to hear. I mean, this is the first one that I can remember of that's only supporters owned, and I think it's a great concept. And even in the NFL in the United States, the Green Bay Packers are owned by the community, not owned by a single owner. It's owned by the entire community, and this is a great idea that you came up with.
Yeah, it's funny because, you look at the Green Bay Packers, and obviously we've adopted some of their ideals and things like that, and they're one of the few, if the only in the United States, that a professional organization that can send out an email or a newsletter to its season ticket holders, who essentially are their shareholders, and say, we need people shoveling snow in the stadium the day before the game, and people come out in the thousands and volunteer their time. Here in Tennessee, if God rest his soul, if Bud Adams would have sent out a letter to the Tennessee Titans season ticket holders and said, we need you to come shovel snow the day before a Christmas Eve game, everyone would laugh him out of the building. So there's something that speaks to people that are financially and emotionally invested in an organization like this. And so far, so good. You know, it's much easier, obviously, for a big pocket, you know, wealthy owner just to write checks for everything and write off expenses and, you know, operate in the red. It's easy for someone to do that. But, you know, with our route, we have to be responsible. We have to make sure we're not, you know, spending money for the sake of spending money. And it's kind of a slow, steady growth, but we look forward to it.
Now, let me ask you this. You picked the National Premier Soccer League at the moment. You're in the Southern region. I was going to say the Southeastern Conference. That's my bad. But in the South.
I will take that too.
Okay, good. But you're in the division of the Southeast Conference with the Atlanta Silverbacks of the NASL, their reserve side, Chattanooga FC, Georgia Revolution, Knoxville Force, New Orleans Jesters, Pensacola City FC, and Rocket City United. To me, this is a heavy-hitting conference in one of the four divisions of the South. Did you want them? Did you want to be in the Southeast, or did you want to be in the South Atlantic Conference, or do you think you want to be with those heavy hitters? Because I know Chattanooga's tough, Georgia's tough, Knoxville, New Orleans, Rocket City is very, very tough. Was that what the division you guys wanted to be in?
Yeah, you know, we love it because, one, with our ownership type, every expense is looked at. And so being able to play teams, you know, five out of our six away games are within, you know, 5 hours, that's huge for an organization like ourselves. So that's the biggest perk. One, it also helps our fans and our supporters who have been amazing so far, showing up with drums at tryouts and everything else. It allows them, you know, inexpensive travel so they can come to games, and it helps just have rivalries. You know, it's kind of hard to be a rival of someone in South Florida or, you know, Virginia. It's pretty easy to be a rival for someone who's 3 hours away in Knoxville, 2.5 hours away in Chattanooga, things like that. But, you know, to your other point, it is going to be a very competitive division. You look at Chattanooga, who went, semifinals of the NPSL last year, won the division. They're a well-run organization. You got to tip your hat off, and they're kind of the measuring stick for pretty much all organizations in the NPSL. Then you got Red Revolution, who was co-champs in their division last year before moving to this one. You got to think a reserve side for a professional organization like the Atlanta Silverbacks are going to be solid. And then, you know, traditionally it was Gulf Coast Texans last year, but this year it's Pensacola. They were second place with a really good record. I think they even split with Chattanooga last year. So, I mean, it just goes on and on. And it's kind of – it's funny you accidentally mentioned the SEC, but it kind of is the SEC conference of the NPSL because there's so many good and quality teams in our division.
Yeah, absolutely. Just out of curiosity, of course, like you've mentioned before, you got the Tennessee Titans just down the road. Of course, the National Hockey League's Nashville Predators. I mean, they have a bunch of Europeans that love the game of soccer as well. Have you gotten any interest from any of the players from either team for this Nashville FC, or you just got started and they just haven't gotten the word yet?
So far, no professional athletes have reached out to us on a local standpoint. There's been some MLS players that I've seen follow us on Twitter and maybe retweet some stuff of ours, and that's kind of cool. As far as local professional athletes, not yet. If we're going to probably appeal to anyone, you're probably right. It would be some of the hockey players because they're, you know, European background, things like that. But, you know, we'll see. I know a lot of the Predators fans, it's kind of funny. I'll be walking through a store with one of our Nashville FC scarves on and see a Predator fan with a jersey on, you know, saying, "Nice scarf." And you know they think it's a Predator scarf, but, you know, it's not. We picked our colors based on the city of Nashville, and I'm sure that's what the Predators picked theirs off of. And, you know, hopefully we can keep the blue and gold prideful throughout all of Nashville.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a great thing. Now, of course, I have to ask you these questions coming up. I'll try not to make them as difficult as possible, but obviously you're starting in the NPSL. Is there any aspirations to go as far as one of the three professional leagues. Obviously not right away, but somewhere down the road, hopefully maybe, I don't know. It's your club. You go as far as you want, but what are your aspirations? USL Pro League, NASL, or do you really consider to go to MLS one day?
I think in our current form and in our current organization type, which is a 501c nonprofit social club, I think that with enough members and the right sponsorship, we can to USL Pro or NASL. I firmly believe that. If we've got some creative, some creative ideas of how to get shared revenue from maybe some of the youth organizations around us and things like that. And of course, as you go to the professional level, your sponsorship dollars and your sponsorship dollar demands are higher. So we feel like in a five-year plan that the NASL or USL Pro it is and could be a realistic option, to be perfectly honest with you. As far as the MLS goes, that's when we would probably have to look at going more towards shares and not memberships. And then that gets really creative. We've looked at, the way the Packers were set up where you can own multiple shares, but you only have one vote. And the club, if you ever decide to sell your shares, the club gets the right to buy those back for $1. So there's a lot of creative ways you can come up with your charter and your bylaws to, make sure you're secure where you are and some individual does come in and buy up majority portion of the club. But in our current form as a nonprofit, I know I'm kind of being long-winded here, but I really feel like we can sustain, obviously, the MPSL and possibly even the NASL or USL Pro.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. And like I said before, I will agree with you that I think at the moment the MPSL is a very good place for the club to be in. Hopefully somewhere down the road, we'll see what happens. Where will Nashville FC be playing currently? Are you renting a local university field, or are you going to be at a high school field? Is it an athletic complex? Where will Nashville FC be playing their games this year?
Well, we have a proposal that is in hand at a very respected local university here in Nashville. Actually, we were speaking about that today, and it looks positive. It's probably best that I don't say the university because last thing I want to do is put egg on our face. But it looks positive. It looks like it's going to happen. If not, we have another two or three backup options that will work, and we could still put on a great environment for our fans. And the big thing is we want to have beer sales. We've got two local companies in Yazoo, and then I say local. Yazoo's local, but we have a distributor here that wants to give us a sponsorship with Thorny Rose. So with those two companies, it's very important that they can sell their products at our games. So the venues that we lock down, that's a big vital portion of our proposal to let us have beer and wine sales at the games. But we have two universities that are strong options, and then there's a local place called Rose Park that's always a backup option that's ran by the city. And we've had talks with the mayor's office, and they're very positive towards our journey and our mission. So we'll see.
All right. Listen, good luck this year in the NPSL. Good luck for the future as well. I really do hope Nashville FC does well this year, and hope to see you one day in the Open Cup. Take care, and thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks so much, guys. Y'all have a great night.
No problem. Chris Jones, the owner of the fan-operated Nashville FC. And as we move on here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, as we get ready to move forward here, CONCACAF Champions League, it's going to begin tonight, obviously, with the Panamanian side, Arabic Unido, taking on Alajuelense from Costa Rica at 10 o'clock tonight. But, of course, tomorrow and Wednesday will be the MLS games in the CONCACAF Champions League. And, of course, joining me right now from Sporting Kansas City, the assistant coach and goalkeeper coach, it's Mr. John Pascarella. John, thank you for the time, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Daniel. How are you tonight?
Very good, John. Very, very good. before we get into the business here of this big, big tie against Cruz Azul, kind of funny and strange that Jimmy Nielsen is not with the club anymore. He retired after you won the MLS Cup this past December. Now it's Eric Cronberg. How do you feel Cronberg is going to do this year now that he's the number one guy?
Well, I actually think he's going to be fantastic for us, and I say that based on this. If you look at our CONCACAF games to date and how we got here to the quarterfinals, Crony was the guy that played in all those matches. So those were the games that Jimmy rested last year. We played Crony in those games, and he was fantastic from start to finish in those. He's been with the team for 8 years. He's a guy that knows the organization inside and out. He was with us before we were Sporting Kansas City when we were the Wizards, so he was with us with and through the transformation. And is a guy that has is bleeding blue, really. So it's fantastic to have him. I think he'll do a great job for us. Very experienced guy, not only in the goal, but with the organization as well.
No, that's pretty good, breaking up there a little bit, but hopefully gets you into a better position. We can get your answer. But still, though, we'll see how he does against a big-time opponent like Cruz Azul. To see a former Danish international retiring after a championship, you've seen Jimmy Nielsen for the last couple of years be a rock in net. What did he do that made Sporting Kansas City feel so comfortable that you just felt you're going to win every match?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with what happened off the field. You know, obviously he was a very, very good goalkeeper on the field, and he led the way from the back. But it's the things that people didn't see, the way he led the locker room, the way that he could keep guys calm in situations that weren't always that way. You know, if you look back a few years when we first opened the stadium, we played 10 games on the road. Actually, it was 11 games with the Open Cup game. And we came out of that stretch in terms of our MLS record being, I think, 1-6-3 or 1-7-2, if I remember correctly. And you know, guys in the locker room were starting to panic. And, you know, you looked around and you saw the way Jimmy kind of held the group together and made sure that they didn't lose faith in what we were doing. And that just came from having been involved in soccer his entire life and having had such a long career as a professional. And, you know, that's a thing that's very, very difficult to teach people early on. So having that stability, not only in the goal, but in the locker room and being a settling factor for us there was instrumental in us growing as a team and having the success that we did over the last couple of years.
Absolutely agree with you. Jimmy Nielsen's been a big rock for you guys for the last several years, an Open Cup championship in 2012, and an MLS Cup championship last year in 2013. Now you got yourselves a big-time matchup against Cruz Azul down in the Mexican Primera Division at the moment in the standings in this Clausura season. They're leading at the top of the table. You got yourselves a pretty good opponent right now. What worries you about Cruz Azul in this first leg coming Wednesday night?
Well, a little bit of everything. They're a balanced team. They're in the top of the Clausura right now for a reason. They're playing very, very consistent soccer. I think their biggest strength on their team, obviously their goalkeeper's experience, he's international level, he's very, very good. But their front four players, Rojas, who plays wide on the right, and then Formica in the center of midfield, Fabian wide on the left, and Pavone up top, those four, their movement off the ball and their ability to interchange positions, the fluidity of their movement, is very, very good and very difficult to defend against. So that's the part I think that's going to be is going to be difficult for us. At the same time, I think we present some you know, matchup problems for them as well. The game is played at a different pace, the way we play it, than what they're used to in the Mexican League. And I think that it'll be a very, very interesting game from start to finish, both legs.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget they got the former national team gentleman from Mexico, Gerardo Torrado. I know he's going to be a very, very big X factor for Cruz Azul facing Sporting Kansas City. What is the – I'm not to ask you to give away the game plan, but what do you have to do to try to get him off the scoreboard or at least to take the ball away from him?
Well, you know, the thing is, if you watch the way we play, if you watch what we've done over the last few years, we don't change a lot for the opponent, to be quite honest. We try to force them to change and to play the way we want to play. So, you know, I don't see us doing anything differently than we've done over the last few years. I think it's about high-pressure defending. I think it's about pressing them all over the pitch, including Toronto and any of their other attacking players, and not letting them get comfortable on the ball. I think anytime you give players of that caliber, even players that aren't quite that caliber, time and space, they're going to be able to pick you apart. The key really is to keep them under pressure and to keep them guessing and finding it difficult to play at the tempo that they want to play at, and force them to play at the tempo and speed that we want to play the game.
Absolutely. I mean, we all know here in Major League Soccer what Sporting Park is to everyone, not just for the supporters, but for Sporting Kansas City as well. It's well advertised, Blue Cauldron. It's very difficult for opponents to get a win. But obviously, they got a pretty damn good home field advantage back in Mexico. Not to press you about the result for this coming Wednesday, but what if the result does go your way in the first leg, what will you try to do when you go down to Mexico City to take on Cruz Azul? Because that stadium's pretty damn good, pretty damn scary and loud as well from the supporters.
It is. It would obviously be an intimidating environment going in there, regardless of whether we're up 1-0 or 2-0 on aggregate or whether it's even or we're behind. But the idea is to go there with a lead. The idea is not to give up goals. And, I mean, I know that sounds obvious, but we've built our success the last 2 or 3 years in being very difficult to beat, very difficult to penetrate against, very difficult to score goals against. And if we can do that, you know, when you're talking about a team that's used to having success, when you're talking about a team that has a very strong following like they do, all of a sudden the pressure starts to build on them. The pressure becomes one where, you know, are we going to get a goal today? And that's what their fans start to wonder, and people start getting on the backs of the players. So, you know, the longer that we can keep them off the scoreboard, the better off we're going to be.
Just out of curiosity, the last time that Cruz Azul faced an MLS opponent in the CONCACAF Champions League, it was Real Salt Lake. Did you get those tapes to see what you can do scouting-wise against Cruz Azul?
We didn't, actually. What were, you know, and to be honest, that's probably not fair for me to say, because our video analyst and the guys that do all the performance analytics for us have handled all that stuff, but I have not seen video of those matches. So there's maybe people in our coaching staff and our organization that have, but I haven't. But what I have focused on, and I think what most of our coaching staff has focused on, is the games that they've played so far to date in this part of the season, in their Clausura season. Because really that's what's important. It's what's their form like now, what's their substitution patterns like now. If you look at their team over the last number of games, it changes very, very little. They've had pretty much the same starting 11 over the last few games, and I think it's going to stay that way in the match against us as well. I don't expect them to rest anybody. I don't expect them to take us lightly. I think that they're going to go after it. But to answer your question, it's really the more recent stuff that we've looked at and not looking back at when they played against Real Salt Lake.
Obviously, this coming Wednesday is the first of potentially 6 games, 2 quarterfinals, first, second leg, semifinal, first and second leg, and, of course, the final, first and second leg. Real Salt Lake was the first club to reach the final of a CONCACAF Champions League, but, of course, they did not win. They did not beat Monterrey. This would be a very big thing to happen if Sporting Kansas City could be the first club to win this championship and go to the FIFA Club World Cup in December. I know you still got plenty of season in front of you, but how cool would that be to have that opportunity to face the best from UEFA, CONMEBOL, Africa, Asia in the FIFA Club World Cup tournament in December?
You know, it's interesting you asked the question, because as we were wrapping up preseason and starting to talk about and focus on our season here, that is one of our goals. We want to be the first team from MLS to win the CONCACAF Champions League. We want to play in that Club World Cup. We think it would be fantastic for the organization. obviously from a selfish standpoint in terms of the players and the coaches, we all want to be involved in an event like that. But we want to be able to fly the banner for MLS. We'd love to be the first club to be able to do it. And Salt Lake came close. They're a super organization. We're just hoping to go one better.
Absolutely. And, of course, that would be a big feather in the cap of not just Major League Soccer, but U.S. Soccer as well, to get that representation in the Club World Cup when that does happen in December. But once again, you got to take care of the first leg of the quarterfinals against Cruz Azul. I guess, finally, this is the first time, and I don't know if it's ever happened in the history of professional soccer in this country, whether it's the original NASL or when Major League Soccer got started. What is your opinion about the replacement referees right now that just got started in the league? You had one in your season opener against the Seattle Sounders over at CenturyLink Field. Was that particular referee good? Was he not so good? Or do you think hopeful that in a matter of time a deal can be struck with the referees in the league?
You know, I can't really speak to whether a deal is going to get struck or even how I feel about it. I mean, I hope it all works out for what makes the most sense for the league overall. But what I can speak to is the match that we played in Seattle. And the gentleman that did our game, I thought, did a fantastic job. And I say that even in the fact that we lost the game, you know. And there's going to be a call here or a call there that you're not going to agree with, but that happens in every single match. But I thought what he did do is I thought that he was extremely consistent. If he was going to call a ticky-tock kind of game, then he called it both ways. If he was going to let certain stuff go, then he allowed it to go for both teams. He was very consistent. He managed the players and the emotion of the match very, very well. He didn't allow the crowd in Seattle to get to him, which sometimes does in MLS. I mean, it's an intimidating crowd. They get 35,000 to 45,000 people every single game in that stadium. It's a phenomenal environment, an intimidating environment for an official. But he was very, very good in our game. And I only saw two other matches. I saw most of the D.C. Columbus match, and I saw almost all of the Dallas FC match. And I thought those were well officiated as well. Now, I don't know any of these new officials, but I thought just based on those three games that the quality of officiating this past weekend was very good. But I'm saying it based on having seen those three matches and those three matches only.
Absolutely, John. I really do appreciate the time. I thank you for coming on the show. Good luck this Wednesday night, and good luck in the rest of the CONCACAF Champions League as well as in the MLS season. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Take care.
No problem at all. John Pascarella, the assistant coach as well as the goalkeeper coach of Sporting Kansas City, discussing, of course, Eric Cronberg, the retirement of Jimmy Nielsen, and the opponent that they're going to be facing in Cruz Azul. You can catch all the games of the CONCACAF Champions League 2013-14 edition. Yes, 13-14 edition. Catch it on Fox Sports 2 or Fox Soccer Plus. And on the MLS, on the schedule for these games, tomorrow night, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, San Jose will be hosting Toluca on Fox Sports 2. You can also catch Sporting Kansas City against Cruz Azul Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific on Fox Sports 2. And then after that match is done, head on over to Fox Soccer Plus for the Los Angeles Galaxy taking on Club Tijuana, as, of course, that is the other MLS game that is in the CONCACAF Champions League. When you're done listening tonight, Univision Deportes, you can go and watch that first game, a non-MLS as well as a non-Liga MX team, as Aluenza of San Jose will be taking on Arabe Unido of Panama, and that will be at 10 o'clock tonight. Don't forget, of course, once the first leg is done, next week is the second leg, and, of course, if the aggregate is tied and not a lot of away goals, then, of course, there will be overtime in those matches in the second leg. So join me this coming Friday, as we'll have on those people, Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline, Lisa Erickson from Quake Rattle and Goal and Centerline Soccer, Adam Serrano, the LA Galaxy insider, and of course John Jagu, who covers the Mexican League, Mexican Primera Division, and the national team. He covers them on Big Soccer. He'll be joining us as well, joining me as well this coming Friday, March 14th, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific, to recap first legs in all the quarterfinal games that are related to MLS and, of course, FMF sides. Join me for that on Friday. Just to continue on CONCACAF Champions League here, as we're going to preview the other two games involving the MLS teams with the Liga MX sides. Club Tijuana taking on the Los Angeles Galaxy. Amazingly, that this will be a game where the distance is not so great over at the Mexican border, not far away. They could probably take satellite dishes and spy, or binoculars, or eyeglass, those long eyeglasses when the sailors used to use to see in front of them to spy on their neighbors below. Telescopes. That's it. Telescopes. That's what it is. To do everything possible. But I will say this. It's going to be huge. It's going to be big just to see this roster. My God, I mean, we know these Liga MX sides are very, very strong, and they're very, very dangerous. Of course, just recently, Club Tijuana, I believe they signed a former New York Red Bull player in Amando Moreno, and how he is going to be now part of this side. And, of course, let's also not forget Hercules Gomez is also with Club Tijuana, along with another American player on the national team, and Edgar Castillo, part of this team. This and other pretty good players as well coming in here, some probably for the national team. Let's also not forget midfielder Joe Corona in midfield for Club Tijuana, of course, also on the national team. This is going to be huge. This is going to be a big-time game, and, of course, we all know what's going to happen between both sides here. It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard-fought. You don't try to overlook the little Chihuahua dog because, you know, their bark is not that bad. Their bite, however, is terrible because they can get you right in the butt. This is going to be a big matchup. This is going to be a tough, tough matchup for both sides. Of course, if John Jagu were here, as well as Adam Serrano, they would tell you that this is going to be a tough matchup for both sides. Landon Donovan, of course, will be ready for this. Robbie Keane will be ready for this. They've got themselves the Galaxy. Once again, their lineup is pretty good. They lost 1-0 to Real Salt Lake to open the season, but that doesn't mean that the Galaxy are starting to lose shape. It doesn't mean they're starting to lose firepower on the field. Maybe a little bit older, but they're not losing that much at all. But still, though, you're going to see this team fighting tooth and nail this coming Wednesday night as both sides are going to fight it out pretty hard. They're going to fight it out pretty hard, and everything looks like it's going to be shaping up into a hell of a quarterfinal two-leg tie. Don't forget, it'll be at the StubHub Center this Wednesday night on Fox Soccer Plus, and then next week they head on down to Mexico down there. It's going to be interesting. Everything is going to be pretty good. Now, I'm going to tell you this right now. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to see this matchup. And let's also not forget about this matchup coming up on Tuesday night, the San Jose Earthquakes taking on Deportivo Toluca. And once again, you got some pretty good players here. Also, some players that were on the national team from Mexico, like Antonio Nelson, Zinha, he's called. He's going to be in the midfield for Toluca. And the forwards, they're stacked, very stacked. They got some good players also outside of Mexico. Obviously, Edgar Benitez from Paraguay, along with Paulo Cesar from Paraguay. But maybe this is going to be a tougher hill to climb for the Earthquakes. I'm not saying I'm doubting the Earthquakes. I'm not saying that I don't think that I don't want to say that I think they're not going to be able to take them on. I will give the Earthquakes a fighting chance. If Wondolowski performs well, it's a fighting chance for the Earthquakes to get something done. And once again, they will be over at Buckshaw in the first leg. Second leg will be down in Toluca. But once again, you're going to see a team like the Quakes, they're probably going to have a tougher time with their opponent. But they could steal a victory here. They could steal a victory at home. We'll see what happens. But this is going to be a big-time matchup. This is going to be a big-time matchup for these guys because they are really going – they're really going to get a good lesson here. And I'm not saying I'm going to be voting, going against San Jose. I believe San Jose is going to do well, but up to a point where they got to keep their wits above them because Toluca is probably too good, and they're going to find a way to beat the Quakes, and they're probably going to hammer them a lot in the goal. We've got to be fair. Not saying I'm giving up on the Quakes. I'm just saying let's take a look and see what they're going to do if they're going to take on a powerhouse like Toluca because it's going to be huge. It's going to be very, very huge. And I really do believe that Toluca is going to give them a lot of problems. Are they going to be a handful? That's not really debatable. They're going to be a handful whether you're going to like it or not. And once again, I'm rooting for the Quakes here. I'm rooting for the Galaxy. I'm rooting for Sporting Kansas City because, like I've said in the past, I want to see an MLS side get to the FIFA Club World Cup because that is what we're all striving for now. I understand. How can you say this if D.C. is in it? But look, I'm going to have to grin and bear it if D.C. does find a way to get into it. And, of course, that's going to be in the 14-15 tournament. We'll see what happens. But I'm telling you right now, this is going to be interesting. It's going to be exciting. Once again, this is our Champions League. I know it's fun to watch the UEFA Champions League and the Copa Libertadores, but the truth of the matter is this is our Champions League. This is the one where we really hope we get that opportunity on MLS side, American or Canadian. We hope to get that opportunity to go into December. Whether it's back in Morocco, it's going to be somewhere in Japan. Maybe one day it'll be hosted here in the U.S. Would love to see that. Obviously, certain things are going to have to go their way to get it done like that. But still, though, we should be able, hopefully, to host it one day in the CONCACAF region. And I think the USA would do a great job in hosting it. And if you want to see that article I wrote, in Soccer News Day, just go ahead to click the columnists section, click on my name, Daniel Feuerstein, scroll down my list of articles, mostly Red Bull articles. But if you do scroll down a little bit and then you see the article, of course, it's going to be called could the USA host the Club World Cup? And that's posted on Monday, December 23rd, so of last year, of 2013, my final article of 2013. But this is what we hope for. Salt Lake had that opportunity. They were on the road for a 2-2 draw at Monterey. They were ahead on the goal of the away goals rule. And then, of course, Humberto Suazo, who always finds a way in big games to pull Monterey from the jaws of defeat into the light of victory. So it should be interesting what's going to happen here as we move on. We have some time here before we move on to the Red Bull Hour. And before I do, Major League Soccer all of a sudden did something where they changed the rules of the playoffs. They changed the rules of the playoffs because obviously something happened in the Red Bulls Dynamo playoff games in the two legs. And the problem was away goals. Road goals, away goals did not count. Because if both legs were finished on aggregate 3-3, and the Red Bulls had two away goals to Houston's one away goal, the Red Bulls would have moved on to the conference finals to face Sporting Kansas City. But isn't it interesting that they have decided to add that now? They decided to add away goals rule for the playoffs for this year before the season got underway. And let me just say to Major League Soccer, thank you. Thank you. It's about time. It's about time you brought in the away goals rule for the playoffs because, let's be honest, they really did need them. I felt I was a strong proponent to bring in the away goals rule into the MLS Cup playoffs. It had to happen. So all I can say is it's about time Major League Soccer did this. It's about time Major League Soccer actually made this rule big and made this rule special because we needed it. And now we're going to see if overtime will happen. And we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen when these playoffs get underway and everything will be fine. And now we're going to tick off in about 20 seconds. We're going to have the first New York Red Bull Hour. As we preview or review the entire season. But before I review the game in Vancouver this past Saturday, today I'm going to do something special, and I'm going to honor a gentleman who sadly lost his life in the middle of the season last year. For some of you not aware, as before I started blogging, before I started this live streaming show here on Blog Talk Radio for almost 5 full years, I was a member of an technically still am a member of the Empire Supporters Club. They are the first supporters club of the Metro Stars Club, now, of course, New York Red Bulls. And I joined them in the 1999 season, where that was really a horrible season for the club, one of two horrible seasons for the club, and found out about a gentleman sadly lost his life unexpectedly on a very bad highway accident on Interstate 80 heading back home from an event he was coming back from. That gentleman's name is Mr. Cesar Castello. And in certain things about Cesar is this with me. Well, first of all, I've never met him. I don't know Cesar. But the point that I'm doing this is, A, he was a hard-nosed supporter for this club. B, we're both ESC, Empire Supporters Club. So to me, I've lost a brother. I lost a brother in Cesar Castello. We didn't know each other. I probably might have seen him hanging around the hangout at Al Pastore in Newark near the bridge going to Red Bull Arena, but I've never met him. I've never talked with him. But no matter what, we are ESC. We're brothers, regardless of the fact. Cesar was born in the Bronx, like myself, moved to Jersey at a certain age, like myself, when we were young. He attended Ramapo College. I attended Ramapo College. He lived in Wayne, New Jersey. I moved from Bergen County to Pine Brook, New Jersey, with my wife at the moment. We'll be 5 years married. But in certain ways, Cesar was like me. People have said he was a good person, very thoughtful. He loved life, and he loved the club he supported. And I hope Cesar was watching and he saw that supporter shield being raised to the rafters, raised to the rooftops of Red Bull Arena on that great late Sunday afternoon, early evening, when they defeated the Chicago Fire 5-2 and finally got the first hardware in the history of the club. Cesar will be gone, of course, but let's be honest, to everyone at the ESC, including everyone in the South Ward, his name and memory will not be forgotten. To his family, my condolences and sincere apologies for the loss of your son. And to everyone that is ESC, we've lost one of our own, but he'll never be forgotten. Thank you very much. And now to review this match, or maybe I should burn the match, burn the tapes. Well, I've already gotten rid of it off my DVR, that's for sure. But it's interesting what happened in this matchup. I'll get to Mike Petke right now, to be honest with you. He said he got it wrong. And knowing Mike Petke, you know, when he says that he got it wrong, he admits it, and that's good enough for me. Mike Petke admitted probably he should have put other people out there first than the people he had penciled into the starting 11. He admitted he should have gotten Kosuke Kimura out. On the left side, instead of Richard Eckersley. And unfortunately, or at least the right side, Richard Eckersley was on the right side, and Richard Eckersley, sadly, brought this game down completely for New York, because this was a very, very poor performance from him coming over from Toronto FC. I thought Sakaya did a decent job. I thought Armando did a good job. I really felt Bobby Convy did a decent job too. Wasn't spectacular, but I thought he did a decent job. To be honest with you, the first half for the Red Bulls should have been 0-0. It probably would have been 0-0. A certain situation happened in the area, and Richard Eckersley put himself and the club in a position should never have been in the first place. He was in the area. Of course, he's trying to defend the ball, and his arms were up. They were up in an unnatural position. Then the ball struck him. Where did the ball struck Eckersley? That is still being debated in my mind. That is still being debated in my mind because I've been looking at that replay over and over and over and over again. But regardless, he had his arms up. And if you have your arms up, you're inviting trouble. And that's what happened. He invited trouble. But let's really take a look at this because I want to be fair a little bit to Richard Eckersley. But you really can't be when he's keeping players onside and he's keeping his arms up in the area allowing penalties. And the angles that I saw, and most of you saw it too, it was a low-angle, close-up shot from the other side of the field where the ball struck Eckersley on the left side. Did it strike him on the shoulder? Did it strike him on the elbow? Did it strike him in the stomach? Did it strike him off the side below the elbow, missing it? I can't tell because you don't have a camera angle showing me the opposite side of Eckersley. I can't see it. I cannot say definitively if it was handled or not. There was another angle. The camera panned too fast to the left, and all you saw was a body streaking on the camera or on your televisions. I could not tell at all if the ball truly struck him in the arm, the elbow, or his stomach, or the side below the elbow. I couldn't tell. I really could not tell. But once again, you put your arms up in an unnatural position in the area, you are inviting trouble. And trouble found Eckersley. That was an absolutely terrible penalty to cough up in the first half. Other than that, I thought the Red Bulls played well in the first half. I really thought they did strong. I thought they played strong. I thought they were engaged. I really thought that they were having a great game and they're going to come back from that. But then it all fell apart in the second half. It all fell apart in the second half. Sadly, Eckersley allowed a player to be onside. Sadly, they allowed a player to get in there, and it was Sebastian Fernandez on a hell of a shot, assisted by Darren Maddox. It was a hell of a shot in the 49th minute. You knew Robles could probably get a fingertip on it, but he couldn't keep it out. 2-0 Red Bulls, 2-0 Vancouver, and then more trouble came in the back end of the second half. Kenny Miller chipping over Robles, Eckersley once again keeping him onside. And then, of course, Pedro Morales in the 89th minute, coup de grace, it's over, 4-0. for Vancouver. Thank goodness for Bradley Wright Phillips for a consolation prize to make it 4-1, but you knew it was over anyway. You just had to ruin the clean sheet for the Whitecaps and for Usted. Nice header, but then here's the question that you have to ask Mike Peckin. Even he admitted that he should have had Bradley Wright Phillips starting this match. Why wasn't he starting? Well, why wasn't Peggy Lou Yandula playing behind Tim Cahill and Bradley Wright Phillips? Because that would have been a lot better. That would have made the attack better, more sustained, and plus you subbed him in too late. You subbed Bradley Wright Phillips a little too late in the 73rd minute. And I also believe he subbed out the wrong guy. I believe he subbed out Peggy Lou Yandula for the wrong reasons. The person that Mike Pecky should have subbed out was Eric Alexander. Eric Alexander should have been subbed out of that game. So Lou Yandula can go back into the midfield to be the distributor that he should be, holding the ball, distributing the ball. And then you got Cahill and Wright Phillips up top together. Mike Pecky admitted that, you know, he made a mistake. And you know what? Now starts the time where, you know, the rookie season is over. The learning curve is finished. Mike now has to go out there and really plan very hard who he's going to use in the starting 11 when you do not have a Thierry Henry or a Jaimison Olave, when you are either giving them both a break or if you're visiting Vancouver, New England, Seattle, as well as Montreal, if it's going to be inside the Olympic Stadium in the early half of the season. Because the only field turf Thierry Henry will play on is the field in Portland, because it's really simple. It's not that type of field turf where these stadiums are shared with an NFL, in case of Vancouver, a Canadian Football League team in the BC Lions, because there's an extra layer of sand that's underneath that field turf that will cause his ankle or his tendon to flare up in the ankle. That's the big question here. That is the big question. And right there and then, that is the situation that's in front of us, is when Thierry Henry gets his breaks. We're going to have to see what Mike's going to do. It's only one game. I understand. This is not about throwing Pecky under the bus. This is just letting Pecky know that be aware of the sophomore slump. That's all it is. Be aware of the sophomore slump, because it could come back and really bite you in the butt. That could be the problem right there. But let's continue on here. Let's go back to Richard Eckersley. You know, Richard, I understand what everyone is saying about him. He's a Toronto reject. You know, we're getting their scraps for whatever they've done in the at the end of the regular season last year. Red Bulls, why are you getting Toronto FC's scraps? You know what? I will say this. I think for Richard Eckersley, we got to give him some time. Did he make boneheaded moves? Absolutely. He made boneheaded moves. He didn't keep up with the attacking situation of Vancouver. Darren Maddox, Kenny Miller ran roughshod. And they took advantage of the defensive players for the Red Bulls, the back line, tattered and torn. But once again, this is only the first game. We're not going to see that much in field turf games in this league for the Red Bulls because most of the teams that use it will be coming over the Red Bull Arena, like Seattle and like Portland. But Eckersley has to understand that this is a different situation. Toronto, I know, Toronto is a hard-nosed city for sports, especially during hockey season with the Maple Leafs and the Raptors and the Blue Jays. And while some are going to be thinking, well, you know, he thinks he's getting away from all that stuff in Toronto, it's going to be 10 times worse if he continues to play miserably here at Red Bull Arena. Because here in New York, he's going to get blindsided. He's going to get smacked across the face in front of him. And then he's going to get sandwiched on the side. Mr. Eckersley, do you know what you got yourself into? Because if you thought Toronto fans are not passionate enough, you haven't been here. Because I'm telling you right now, we cannot do this for New York. Can't. You just cannot do this when you're playing in New York. You think it's fine from the outside, but when you're inside, it's a whole different animal. It's a whole different animal. But I will say this. Be prepared, because people are ready to throw you out right now. People are ready to throw you out of this team right now. Not talking about from within Red Bull, but in the stands, the South Ward. And, hey, what are you going to do? This is, you know, part and parcel of playing here in New York. It's not just your ability. You got to be mentally tough. You got to face the big, you know, the big-time fans. You got to go in front of the people sitting in those stands to see you get a victory and play well. You got to do it. And if you're not going to do it, then you might as well leave. Simple as that. It's just as simple as that. If you're not going to do it the right way. I mean, you went to the media day / season ticket holder party. People are hoping that you're going to do a great job. Like I said before, go ahead. You're going to get your probably 1 or 2 game break. But I'm here to tell you right now that people are ready to let you have it. Really, really badly. You watch. It's going to happen. Let's talk some positives out of this game. And, you know, there were some positives in this game. How about Lloyd Sam? Lloyd Sam attacking down the right side. I mean, he looked fantastic. He had purpose. He was hungry. He wanted the ball. He wanted to bring it up. He had great opportunities for crosses. 1 or 2 maybe mistimed a little bit, but he did have a great opportunity at a shot. And I thought that was going in, inside the near upper corner. I thought he was going to strike the back of the net. And I thought the Red Bulls were going to take a lead right there or tie the match. So Lloyd Sam is now showing why he was brought over here at the time by both Hans Backe and Eric Soler to replace Dane Richards when he was leaving. Sam's good form continued on from the middle to the end of last year into the preseason. That great goal he scored against the Philadelphia Union, giving several assists to certain players in the preseason games. And let me tell you something. This is a guy that came over. You didn't know much about him, but you can tell that he's got great speed. He's got a hell of a shot. He can definitely fake out the defenders, and he could put it into the back of the net. Lloyd Sam right now is looking pretty good, and hopefully he'll remain on the right side of the midfield, on the wing, bringing up the ball, and if he does have an opportunity to take a shot, he'll take it. Great game by Sam. I thought he looked fantastic, and I hope once again he'll get that opportunity. Peggy Luyendula. I thought he had a great game too. I thought Peggy Luyendula had a great game. He held the ball strong. He took some opportunities to pass. Took some opportunities to bring it up, to hold it, and to try to create something. Peggy Luyendula, once again, should not be up top as a striker. I think he has really succeeded in moving Eric Alexander to the bench. I understand maybe why Pecky wants to keep Alexander in the starting 11. He did very well as a right-sided midfielder on the wing. And don't get me wrong, I think he had a great season last year too. Maybe could have been a lot better. We're seeing the evolution of Lloyd Sam and Peggy Luyendula, in my opinion, slowly pushing out Eric Alexander to the bench. I think the only time Eric Alexander should be on the field is when he's giving Lloyd Sam a rest. Because I really think that Eric, as good of a player as he is, I just think Sam and Luyendula are several notches higher than Eric right now. Johnny Steele had a decent game. Could have been a little bit better on the how he took his shots, probably a little more power on his shots. I thought Tim Cahill, he gave it a go. Unfortunately, Cahill just didn't have anything in him. I know he tried. That's all you can ask for. I mean, you're crossing over, what, 10 time zones probably? I mean, you're going from Millwall in England to JFK in New York, and then you got to take another flight to go from JFK in New York to Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada, or unless it's Millwall, you know, you're going from Heathrow in London to JFK, and then you got to go to Toronto, and then you got to go from Toronto to Vancouver. I don't know how it happened. I'm only speculating. Don't take my speculation seriously. But, you know, I understand it was an international date. You know he's going to be for Australia in the World Cup this summer. We're going to probably lose him for a few games or two. The point is that you can probably tell a little bit Tim Cahill didn't look like himself. But that's okay. You know, he's coming back for international duty with Australia. Cahill is basically going to be a lot better now that he's going to have a full week of rest, getting ready for the home opener against the Colorado Rapids this coming Saturday, 4 o'clock Eastern on MSG Network, formerly on NBC Sports Network, now on MSG Network. And in reality, you know, there's only so much you can ask from your designated players, your top-notch scoring players coming over all the way from Millwall, England. I mean, maybe you wish that the friendly was back in Australia so that he can probably fly, you know, from the across the Pacific and then get to Vancouver with no problem. But, you know, what are you going to do? But I thought Tim Cahill didn't look like himself after the first 45 minutes. Not complaining, not pointing a finger at him, just saying he just didn't look like himself. What I think about the new central defender in Armando, you know, I thought he played very well. I thought he did okay. I thought he actually had a good game. I really did. I really thought he had a good game, and I really thought he played strong. He did well against Darren Maddox up to a certain point. There was a time he was beaten by Maddox, but then Maddox fouled him, and then there was a time where he fouled Maddox, and everything, of course, fell apart. But other than that, overall, very dreadful. Dreadful performance all the way around. Only a few here and there did well. And at the end of it, that's the end of it. It's really nothing you can do about that. And, of course, they were without Thierry Henry and Hymas and Olave due to the fact that that field turf question. It's always going to be that field turf question. Now, once again, many people are asking or saying, well, Thierry Henry is, you know, he'll always play on grass. He'll never play on field turf. He'll never do this. He'll never do that. Thierry Henry will never play in Seattle. He'll never play in Vancouver. He'll never play in New England. He'll never play in Montreal when they are in the Olympic Stadium. So he's really scared of touching the fake stuff. But the truth of the matter is he has played in Portland twice. Thierry Henry has played on field turf in Portland, now called Providence Park, I believe it's called now, the stadium. And here's the reason why he's played in Portland. The field turf they use in Portland is not the same surface as it is in Vancouver, in Seattle, in New England, and inside the Olympic Stadium in Montreal. Once again, it has to be stressed. There's an extra layer of sand underneath the field turf. This was said by Alexei Lalas last year when the Red Bulls were in Seattle on a Sunday night. And he said that's the reason why Thierry Henry will not play on that surface, because of his chronic ankle tendon. It flares up. And when you put an extra layer of sand underneath the turf, it's going to be a lot harder for him to be running on. And I'm not here to debate, okay, I wish Seattle would change the surface to regular grass then field turf. I wish Vancouver did the same thing. I wish this stadium that has it would do the same thing. That's not for me to debate. I'm not debating that. If that is what they're going to use, that's what they're going to have to use. If this is the case, then, you know, look, it's up to the clubs that own or run the stadiums to change the surface if they want to. I'm not saying they should. It's not my call. If that's the situation in Seattle, then that's fine. If this is the situation in Vancouver, then fine. Let me talk about some of these things. I'm more upset at New England and the Kraft family, because the truth is, when they built that stadium, Gillette Stadium, it had a natural grass field. The only time, or the only reason why they ripped it out, because why? Because the Jets beat the Patriots at their own game. Not to screw with the Revolution. This is more of the NFL team changing the surface than helping the MLS team. Because back a couple, three, four, five, 6 years back, I forget what year it was, but Eric Mangini was the head coach of the New York Jets. He was a disciple of Bill Belichick, and Mangini beat the Patriots in a torrential downpour, basically beating the Patriots at their own game in their version of the mud game. Jets won, Patriots lost. When the Patriots went on the road, they pulled out the grass and they put in the field turf. That is the truth. Vancouver Whitecaps, the owner of the Whitecaps, and this is the story that I've heard from up in Vancouver and Canada, from Toronto and all over the place. The owner of the Whitecaps owns a piece of land that they want to build a stadium on for the Whitecaps. And the problem is that the city government said, no, you can't build this on your land because we want to buy that land from you. So they were basically told not to build anything there. I don't know if it's still in court or not, but they moved to BC Place, and now they're sharing the stadium with their Canadian Football League friends in the BC Lions. So if you think about what could have been a natural grass field for the Whitecaps, and they built a stadium there, then Thierry Henry would be playing. But no, the Whitecaps are forced to play on field turf. So there you go. Seattle, it's there, whatever. Montreal, it's only inside the Olympic Stadium when the season gets underway. And it's very cold, of course. But this is the situation that's right there. I mean, I wish I can tell you something different, but, it's not going to happen. Do I think, personally, my personal opinion, do I think every stadium in Major League Soccer should have a natural grass surface? Yes, I think so. I think it would be a lot better. But the truth of the matter is, reality has set in that you're going to have these places that's going to be using a field turf surface, an unnatural surface. Nothing you can do about it. If that's what they want, that's what they're going to get. And that's the end of it. Like I said, I'm not here to tell those cities that has an MLS team switch it to natural grass, natural turf. Switch it. It's not my call. I wish it was, but it's not my call. If this is what's going to happen, it's what's going to happen. And unfortunately for the Red Bulls, it backfired on them. I mean, the squad was quality. There was quality in the squad. No bones about it. But the truth of the matter is this. The truth of the matter is that this is what MLS is going to have to deal with, whether we like it or not. I mean, am I getting a little tired of it? Yeah. You know what else I'm getting tired of? I'm also getting tired of having the MLS schedule maker start the season all the time in Montreal. Because not only does Montreal lose an opportunity to see Thierry Henry, but how about alternating it a little bit? Do we have to wait till Montreal gets the two road games in that particular season so that Henry can play at Stade Saputo? I mean, can't they just switch it up? Let them come here April 5th while the Red Bulls will go to Montreal later in the season because, I would love to see Stade Saputo if I make the trek up to Montreal for a road game and be in the press box. Because don't get me wrong, it would be cool to be in the Olympic Stadium. It would be cool to be inside there. But to be honest with you, I'd rather to be at Stade Saputo because that's a great stadium. And let's be honest, it should be meant and made for Thierry Henry to go visit Quebec province and the city of Montreal, because let's be honest, I think they're missing something big when the MLS schedule maker gets it wrong. That's how I feel. Other than that, Cardi did okay. No other complaints, no other problems from my end. And all I can say is this. It's only one game, guys. We don't have to face the Whitecaps again. Mark them off the list. Get ready for the Colorado Rapids, who comes to Red Bull Arena this coming Saturday at 4 o'clock Eastern. And here's the thing. Isn't it funny that the Colorado Rapids took all this time, they took all this time to hire a head coach? I mean, they had a caretaker guy in Pablo Mastroeni, and now he got thrown into it. They gave up. That was it. I mean, for goodness sakes, did it really, really have to take you that long to hire a head coach? Now, I've been told the roster's solid, but they had no direction. So now we're going to have to see what's going to happen when this team comes over from the Rocky Mountains as the New York Red Bulls hoist the supporter shield for pre-game ceremonies. It should be fun. Let me finish off the show by saying this. I know we got plenty of time here before we say goodbye, but I want to say something here. I understand that the MLS Cup is the trophy of all trophies to have. I understand that if you want to be considered big time, you got to win the big one. And I also understand that if this was Europe, then MLS Cup would have been ours last year. We're not in Europe, obviously. We're not in Europe. We're in the United States. Playoffs matter. Playoffs are the big thing. Playoffs is what makes American sports leagues go in this country. Does this supporter shield do for you? It says that you were the best team in the regular season. It also means that being the best team in the regular season, you are going to the CONCACAF Champions League. Does this count? Yes! Of course it counts! Are you kidding me? Do you know how long this club has been waiting to host an International Cup Championship tournament like the Champions League? Getting into the CONCACAF Champions League? I mean, come on. Do you know how tough it is in this league to at least maintain first place as a whole? Forget about being first in the East. First in the entire league. So when someone says on the air, whether it's a podcast, a live streaming show, the ESPN FC guys or the MLS podcasts out there, or even on Sirius XM, and someone comes on there and they say that it's not a major trophy. If it's not a major trophy, then why are we allowed to go into the CONCACAF Champions League if you win it? If you are the best team in the regular season, why are you allowed to go into the CONCACAF Champions League? Tell me that. Why? Are you going to tell me why? Of course you're not going to say anything. Because finally, this club wins something, and it's still poo-pooed, still getting shitted on. Did I say that? It's internet radio. I can say whatever I want. Getting crapped on. Why? Because the Supporters Shield is not as big as the MLS Cup. And fine. That's fine. And hopefully that can be achieved coming up. We'll see what happens. But the truth of the matter is this. If it's not a big trophy, why are we going to the CONCACAF Champions League this coming August? Why are the New York Red Bulls heading to the CONCACAF Champions League this August? Why are they going into the draw to see who they're going to be grouped with? Because you want to know why? And it's kind of confidential here, but I'll tell you why. Because the Red Bulls are the regular season champions of 2013. Because the New York Red Bulls actually won a title. They actually did the job. They actually held the silver platter in their hands. It wasn't the little rinky-dinky thing anymore. No, now it's an actual shield slash platter. The Red Bulls won. The best team in the regular season of 2013. Once again, they'll have an opportunity to try and re-win the Supporters' Shield, to try to win the U.S. Open Cup, try to get into the playoffs, to get into the MLS Cup final and hopefully host it. Or if they are going to finish in first place in the East and not win the Supporters' Shield, they will still go to the CONCACAF Champions League. So what's the problem here? Are you sad because it's not? Are you sad because, you know, the Red Bulls stopped not winning a title? That they stopped not winning something? They all count. I mean, the Galaxy is counting how many Supporters' Shields they've won. DC United always counts on how many Supporters' Shields they've won. Whoever wins the Supporters' Shield, it counts. Oh, but it's New York. It's the Red Bulls. It's the Metros. It's the lovable losers. No, no, it doesn't really matter if they won the Supporters' Shield or not. The real thing is the MLS Cup. You know, you can't really change everything in midstream. I know you guys want to. For those that are tearing down on the Red Bulls, you just want to throw it out there. So let me just say this. What happens if they do win the U.S. Open Cup this year? Let's just say for the hell of it, they do make the playoffs and then they win MLS Cup. What are you going to say next? Well, who do they face? Who are their opponents? Oh, they had an easy time winning it. I mean, is that what's going to come next? Is that the situation that's going to be coming up next to denounce these championship wins for the Red Bulls? I mean, is that what's going to happen? Is it? Because it really shouldn't be like that. Every club in Major League Soccer has this opportunity to win championships of any kind, whether it's single elimination tournament in the U.S. Open Cup, being the best team in the regular season, being the best regular season conference winner, or winning the whole thing. These are the four ways you get into the CONCACAF Champions League. So don't come to me and all of a sudden say that, oh, well, you know, it doesn't really matter what the Red Bulls did with the Supporters' Shield. I mean, it's not really the championship. No kidding. Step one happened. Finally securing hardware. Finally securing MLS hardware. That's the number one thing that happened. The next is to either go get the Open Cup, win the Supporters Shield again, go all the way, and get the big freaking trophy. In this league, because I'm telling you right now, this is the situation that is in front of the Red Bulls right now. We'll see what happens in 2014. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens when this whole thing happens, because let's be honest, right now, 31 game down, 33 to go in the regular season, and let's not forget the extras in the Open Cup and Round 3 and the CONCACAF Champions League. This is going to be big. It's going to be a huge season, more games than you know what to do with. And the idea is to get victory in all of them. You know that. I know that. And we all know the players. One of those things that's going to happen. So we'll see what the situation will be. I will say this. And all I can say is, you know, you're going to get naysayers. You're going to get naysayers all the time. I mean, this is how it works. Trash talking. That's the situation. People are going to say these things, and you know what? You're just going to have to grin and bear it. But that is the situation right now. That's the situation always. And hopefully the Red Bulls will do something bigger and better this season. The MLS season is back, my friends. Major League Soccer season is back. I'm telling you, I'm so happy it's back. I'm thrilled, very happy. Another fantastic season in front of us. Lots of things to take care of. And let's not forget, this coming Saturday at 4 o'clock Eastern, the New York Red Bulls hosting the Colorado Rapids. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait. I know that I've been waiting for this home opener for a while, just like all of you. It's going to be a heck of a celebration. First trophy in the history of the club. This club that's been around since 1996. It's just been absolutely great. Finally, hardware. It finally came. A good first step. Now it's time to take the next step. Already a little bit sidetracked here with a bad loss, but that's okay. Should be a lot better as we move forward. Should be a lot better as we get ready for this home opener. Of course, MSG Network. MSG Network doing all these things. Before the first game of the season got underway, showing those great games and, of course, the big final game against the Chicago Fire. gave up that early goal. Thierry Henry equalized in the first half, and then the four-goal explosion to make it 5-1. It ended 5-2. This is absolutely fantastic. This is absolutely awesome. I cannot wait to get to Red Bull Arena this Saturday for the home opener. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait. It's going to be great. Getting back into the swing of things. Seeing everyone in the South Ward filling up every seat, seeing the entire Red Bull Arena filled up. Now, I don't know what the Red Bull organization is going to do for this home opener. I understand looking at some of the tweets going on. I think they're going to do some sort of special celebration. I could be wrong. I'm just looking it up real quick to see what's going to happen. Yep, here it is. Red Bulls from their Twitter account. Home openers this Saturday at 4 p.m. with a pre-match 2013 Supporters Shield celebration. So as we go to their website, it's just basically single match tickets are available. But there will be a celebration at Red Bull Arena on winning the Supporter Shield from last year. This is going to be a pretty good day. This is going to be a pretty, pretty good day. I know I can't wait for this to happen. Now, I don't know if they're going to unfurl a banner. I don't know if they're going to show the highlights of that game on the big jumbotrons. But this is going to be very interesting. It's going to be great. I see a lot of people here on my Twitter timeline, of course. They're all talking about, some of my loyal listeners are all talking about getting back to Red Bull Arena. Getting back to discussing the season, what's up ahead, what's going to happen. This is going to be absolutely fantastic. So this will be the end of the first review of a Red Bulls match. Of course, join me next Monday to discuss another exciting day of American soccer. We're going to start it off with the USL Pro preview show. Members of supporters, media, bloggers, that cover their clubs in the USL Pro League. They'll be joining me in this roundtable discussion. We'll have some new people joining me. And then we'll review the Red Bulls home game. I'll see the home opener this coming Monday as we get ready for the CONCACAF Champions League. First leg quarterfinals will be this week. Once again, once the show is over, Arabe Unido versus Aluenza. Tonight, tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, San Jose hosting Toluca in the first leg. And then on Wednesday, Sporting Kansas City hosting Cruz Azul, while the LA Galaxy hosts Club Tijuana. Once again, Fox Sports 2 on Tuesday night, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. And then Fox Soccer Plus, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific for the Galaxy match. And then join me on Friday as we review the first leg quarterfinal games of the CONCACAF Champions League, 13-14 edition. And then we'll do it again next week. And then we'll see what happens. We'll see who will advance, who will go into the semifinals. Will we have an MLS side or two facing each other, either in the semifinals or in the final? It's going to be exciting. It's going to be interesting. I can't wait. Going to be cool. I cannot wait for this to happen. Check your local listings for Fox Sports 2 as well as Fox Soccer Plus. If you have Cablevision, it is channel 403 on your Cablevision. Also, don't forget MSG this coming Saturday afternoon, late afternoon, 4 o'clock Eastern, New York Red Bulls hosting the Colorado Rapids. As we're about to close it off here, I just want to say thanks to everyone for listening to the show. The Red Bulls MLS season underway. It's exciting. It's fun. The World Cup is coming very soon in June, June 12th. And I just want to let everyone know this coming World Cup, it's not just reviewing the games involving our U.S. men's national team. I will be reviewing every single World Cup day scheduled from FIFA. From June 12th all the way to July 13th, every game will be reviewed. Every day there will be a review here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. We're going to review every single day games scheduled for the FIFA World Cup. Join me here on Blog Talk Radio. .com/Feuerstein's Fire. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, for more information. I want to thank my guests, Chris Jones, owner of Nashville FC, and assistant coach slash goalkeeper coach John Pascarelli from Sporting Kansas City, joining me for tonight's show. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy your evening. I'll talk to you this Friday after the quarterfinal first leg review of the CONCACAF Champions League. And as always, please, I beg of you to enjoy your football. Thank you very much. Have a good night. Take care, everybody.